Lee Morgan on trumpet, leading his quintet with Sidewinder. This is the title track of his 1963 album. As I said, Morgan is on trumpet, Joe Henderson on tenor sax, Billy Higgins on drums, Barry Harris on piano, and Bob Crenshaw on bass. A fine collection of musicians. This is Lead Stories. I'm Eutrice Lead, and we're going to do a little bit of debating a bit later, just a few minutes on, but a couple of things. We still have the focus on hurricane that is pounding. Soon to be pounding the Carolinas, Hurricane Florence. And it's just off to a slow start, but meteorologists and weather experts are saying that it may be slow, but it won't remain that way. And just the same, they're forecasting serious damage with the storm. Just hope that, even if there's damage, it is repairable and that we do not have a huge loss of life. That's the main thing, that people survive and they can always rebuild and helped to rebuild. But, when these natural disasters strike, there's no telling. So let's keep the situation in our best thoughts and hope that people come through. Because certainly it wouldn't make any difference to Donald Trump. He's already said it is impossible that 3,000 people died when Hurricane Maria hit Puerto Rico. It's impossible, and it never happened. He just says it doesn't compute, it is not real, therefore we need not feel compassion. We not feel that this was really a bad thing that happened in Puerto Rico, from which people still have not recovered, and from which the federal agencies did not do the job they were supposed to do. His administration failed in Puerto Rico. And although the people said so, and although the figures are saying so now, he's still denying it. He said it was an unrivaled success, his administration's response in Puerto Rico. Well, just another example of his mental instability, being so detached from reality. People are telling you this is what happened, and you get up in front of the microphones and you tell the nation that that can't be true. It isn't true. Dismiss it. It's not real. Quite the contrary. We had stunning success in Puerto Rico. In other words, all the reports that we've been carrying here from a Puerto Rican journalist, they're wrong. Totally and completely wrong, according to the president. So he is in his other world. That brings to mind the question. Why does he continue to get coverage? I mean, when people in the news business, and they're supposed to be professionals, keep reporting these crazy stories of, from Donald Trump's head as if they're news, you wonder, are they part of some kind of a conspiracy to distort the truth? Do they not? Do they have they lost the idea of what a story is? And of course, you can report it. You can report the president's distorted view. But you report it as being so extremely bizarre. But instead, they report it as if it's news. Like the president gets up in the morning and he says, well, everything is fine. That we are at the best time. We're having the best time possible. The economy is fantastic. No one in the United States has been killed. Everything is fantastic. That's exactly what they're reporting. And you say, surely somewhere in the newsrooms of America, there are people who still remember what a news story is. And even if there is news here in the fact that the president's version of the damage to Puerto Rico is so extremely at odds with what reality is, that's a story right there. That we continue to see signs of a detached president, totally having a totally different picture from reality. But don't just report what he said. You have people commenting, and you should be able to point to the very different points of view that people have, people who have studied things and have numbers and so forth. But this is very troubling. Everything the president says is a news story, and they leave it at that. They don't bother to point out that he's either losing his mind or he has already lost his mind, but that his version of reality is so much, so totally at odds with what we know reality to be. I tell you, it's a really incredible thing to witness this over and over and over again. And there are all these people following him as if they're about to cover real news. This is not real news. This is a president unraveling, a president out of his mind. And yet you have all these major news organizations assigning reporters to cover him and walking behind him. He's got a herd of misguided reporters. And then it turns out to be news. Whatever it is he says, it turns out to be news. So we are in a very bad way. We can't depend on media to give us at least a reasonable accounting. Reasonable. I would go with reasonable. Outrageous. Well, as you know, the political season continues apace with contests all over the place, leading into the midterm elections this year in November. And here again, we see coverage, but it really isn't coverage as much as we used to define it. And that brings me to a question I'd like to put on the table for consideration today. The news coverage, or whatever we are learning as news coverage of this political season, is very much of the duopoly type. It is news that reflects two different and sometimes not so different views of politics. Democrat on the one hand, Republican on the other. And thus continues a very sad aspect of journalism in the United States, where people covering news, the people who control what we see and hear in the way, and read in the way of information, it does not even dawn on them that they are doing a disservice to themselves and to the public. When we see the world strictly in this bifurcated way, Republicans and Democrats, it is a disservice because it says, it insists, because it cuts it out completely, the whole idea that there are people thinking differently, people having different approaches, people having different values, political values. They may be called independents. They may be from other parties. But they certainly are not strictly Democrat and Republican. So to continue to underscore this very short-sighted view of politics and to define politics in the context of what's happening between the Democrats and the Republicans is itself, I would argue, a way of continuing the disfranchisement of people who are neither Republicans nor Democrats. It's as if to say they have nothing to contribute to the conversation, and we shouldn't be bothered with them anyway. They're kooks. They're crazies. You know, they're not strictly American. All kinds of ways of casting the people who fall outside the pool and definition of Republican and Democrat as something kind of, we don't need to worry about what they're thinking and what they want. And yet, elections are all about this patriotic view, about participatory democracy. Do we see evidence of it? Enough to convince us that the society as a whole respects participatory democracy? Or is it a foregone conclusion that from now until the end of time, our politics and our political thinking will be within the confines of two conflicting sometimes theories called, you know, from the Democratic Party and from the Republican Party? So I'm asking today, we consider this question. Based on our experience, especially in recent years, with the long-standing party system, is it not time to abolish political parties and come up with a whole new formula, since the political party system is at the root of many of our political difficulties? We have to choose sides, and life is not about A or B. We need more sophisticated lives than that. It is incomprehensible that we're stuck with this tired, useless formula of A or B, when neither A nor B seems to suffice. And it squeezes out of the equation other thoughts, other parties, other ways of thinking that may be very, very relevant to what we consider to be a way of life that we want, a way of thinking that we appreciate. And in itself, it is undemocratic. When you have a system that for years and years and years presents to the public this, you know, A or B choice, we have become accustomed to and comfortable with the idea of excluding other choices, which is itself an expression of undemocratic thinking and practice. We're squeezing them out of consideration. We don't think they have anything valuable to say, because if they had anything valuable to say, they would be in the fight. They would get coverage. They would be part of the debates and public discussions, but they're not. And we know they're not. Because the intention is to keep it as is. Democrats, Republicans, and let the flotsam and jetsam fend for themselves. They're not going to win. We'll see to it that they don't win. And we will kind of squelch out even important things that they have to say to present to the electorate for consideration and debate. So this is the question I'm posing to you today. Is it time to abolish political parties, since they are at the root of this problem of squelching the idea of freedom of choice and free political participation? They like it that way. They want it that way. Should we allow it? Should we denounce it? Should we seek something else? And this is not to say, you know, that we don't recognize that they're smaller parties, but that's not the point. The fact is, they shouldn't have to fight for recognition. They shouldn't have to, you know, tolerate the prevailing view that they're a bunch of kooks and they have nothing really important or relevant to say. They don't belong in the arena. So this is a fundamental question of democracy, it seems to me. And I want to know what your thoughts are. We'll take this little break so you can gather up your brain cells and come right back and dive deeply into the topic right after this. You're listening to Lead Stories on PRN.FM. I'm Eutrice Lead, and we're talking political philosophy today. What do we do about the clear evidence that we are destined to be a country of only two parties, the Republicans and the Democrats, and we need not worry about the exclusion of any other parties? We need not pay attention to what they're offering or what they're asking us to consider. We need not pay attention to their political positions. We need not pay attention to the choices they present. we should just, from now on until the end of time, we should consider this a country of two parties because God himself determined that that's the way it ought to be. And by doing so, we constrict our political choices, but more importantly, we violate the very concept, the very precept that we hold so dear about political freedom. So should we disband and abolish the party system and come up with other systems that allow fuller, more meaningful participation by the electorate? 888-874-4888 is the number to call. I want you to give some thought to this. There's no right or wrong. There's just what it is you're thinking. And I would appreciate you defending your point of view by telling us what backs up your opinion on this question. 888-874-4888. We don't have any takers yet. I think you're getting nervous, but there's no need to be nervous. This is very important. This is a very important subject. And we don't really think about it because we've been so conditioned to, you know, talk about what the Democrats are saying versus what the Republicans are saying. And that's it. We leave it at that. And we are okay with other parties being squeezed out, getting no coverage, having little or no room to present their views. And so it is intended, it seems, to be for the end of time. And we should be profoundly affected by that, because that is, in fact, the root of our understanding of what our political process is. Our political process is a contest of ideas, and hopefully we would appreciate the need to evolve as society evolves. And the ironic thing is that this is fairly recent in terms of historical time. Back in the day, you had all kinds of parties putting their points forward to the public, asking for endorsement by way of a vote. But we had several parties formed around several interests, and people had the ability to decide where they would put their vote. That has become almost totally non-existent now. And the Democrats and Republicans are happy to be in charge of our political futures. Any other party than the Democratic or political party, a Democratic or Republican party, we are asked to consider them automatically as, you know, they're not even worth considering. We don't need to hear what they have to say. They don't need to be part of the public debates. They don't need to be part of the process. And so we're comfortable with that. And the evidence shows that in recent decades, we the people have endorsed that view. We've gone along with that argument that, you know, enough already with the Democrats and Republicans, that's enough. And we should be okay with choosing A or B. We need not consider anything else. In fact, to consider another party, seriously consider another party, is to be something of a, what is the word? You know, you're kind of a political defect. You're doing the wrong thing. You must be one of those communists. You're a nonconformist. and you're trying to destroy the political system when all you want to do is to appreciate the fullness of arguments out there and to get a better perspective by considering all of the arguments that you can before deciding where you put your vote. Where are you on the subject? Because political parties have come to be, the main political parties, which we call the duopoly, because in effect they are the main culprits of continuing this shutting out of other parties, because the system has pretty much decided that this is what our political process would be. Do we insist that the people need to have greater choice? All choices that qualify are legitimate, and they should be in the realm of consideration. It shouldn't be any more this business of Democrats and Republicans. They've messed up the system considerably and are denying both other parties and the people the opportunity to enter the fray, to vigorously argue their points, to put them before the public, and to be part of the political process. But here we are, a so-called leading nation of the world, and we have such disdain, we have such fear of opening up the political process, the democratic process. Instead, we are okay with constricting it by closing it up. Your thoughts at 888-874-4888. Bruce from Queens, you get us started today.
Hello, Utrice, and hello to the PRN family.
Thank you, and hello to you.
Okay. I am a student and learning, and my only contention is politics have always been, well, not always, but since I've old enough to understand, it was the duopoly in the 60s, in the 70s, in the 80s. How the black people have paid taxes, and they're supposed to go to Washington, D.C. to bring back goods and service like Adam Clayton Powell had done back in the day. And yet, when I go downtown Brooklyn, I see skyscrapers coming up downtown Brooklyn. And I don't know if we are in those skyscrapers. These are housing buildings downtown Brooklyn. And there's nothing, there's no urban renewal in the community where I grew up in. There's little or nothing, but everybody else gets their fair share except the African-American community. And we vote. We vote time and time again and get little or nothing. And my bone of contention is this, is an acronym, two acronyms that I have is UAM, which stands for University of Automatics, or the United African Movement. And the second one is HELP, History, Ethics, Logic, and Philosophy, that we have to adopt and adapt to in order for our survival in a system, like you always say, we have to create a system that's for our very own survival. And that's what we have to be on. I haven't quite worked it all out because I'm usually best, or we are best when we get in a circle or a gathering where we can thrash these things out and be steadfast on what we have to do.
Well, I appreciate your point of view, but I want you to get to the topic itself. Do you believe this two-party system is in fact an undemocratic system, and we need to provide but we need to make room, legitimate room, not the kind of room that, you know, that's left over, but legitimate room for other political parties to participate in the political process so that people have a fuller range of choice. You just talked about the fact that you as a voter feel left out.
Yes.
Would there be, in your view, would there be justification for opening up the process and getting out of this Republican-Democrat duopoly?
I think we should get out of it because it we're not going nowhere. It's what's that saying? The insanity is doing the same thing over and over and expecting different results. We're not getting no results. So I think throw it away, away with the old and with the new. And the new has to be worked on. It has to be cultured. It has to be worked on with people of like minds. And we can do this because we don't have to have two. There's more numbers in numbers than just two. It's one to infinity. We can get anything. We can do anything. But we got to work together and make it happen. Sure, we should have more than two parties because two parties is a joke. I went out there and voted today. And I felt like you always said, I'm going to vote, and I know the results. I'm not getting nothing. I'm not getting nothing. We're not getting nothing. Goods and services is not delivered to my community. I don't see them. And if they is, it's crumbs at best. So, yes.
How do you think the system would react to your position, saying, we're not getting anything? I don't want either the Democratic Party or the Republican Party. I want the UAM party to be able to participate in our elections fully.
They wouldn't like it, but I don't give a beep, beep, beep about how they feel. I don't care. It's about my survival. I got to be in a system that's for me and for my people, as well as for the rest of the people. They get theirs, they get their fair share. We should get our fair share. We are paying taxes, overabundant taxes, but we just don't get nothing in return for our participation in this political process, this democratic society that we're supposed to be living in. It's not fair.
All right. Well, you got us started in fine style today, Bruce. Thank you so much for contributing. Leona from Michigan, you're on the air.
Greetings, Yatrice, and greetings to your audience.
Thank you. Same to you.
Yes, ma'am. In terms of the Democratic Party, the Republican Party duopoly, does that duopoly need to go? Yes, I think it needs to go. Should have been gone. However, one thing that's helped me when I think about those parties, it's to realize that those two parties are actually corporations. I've heard them called Fortune 500 corporations, the Democratic Party, the Republican Party. For example, the Democratic Party operates as a corporation. It's called DNC Services Corporation, doing business as Democratic National Committee. I learned that from a lawsuit that I was looking at online, or the complaint anyway, with I guess it was Bernie Sanders or suing the DNC or what have you. But when I think of the fact that I'm dealing with another corporation, the Democratic Party is a corporation, Fortune 500 company, perhaps, the Republican Party, same thing. When I was active in the Democratic Party, I saw firsthand that on some levels, there's not a dime bit of difference between the two parties, between the Democrats and the Republicans, especially in the higher so-called echelons, you know, same team, twiddly-dee, twiddly-dum. And you know that saying, if you got a bird, the left wing and the right wing are both parts of the same bird kind of deal. But I wanted to ask you, if you don't mind, the other thing is, yeah, I think they're non-profit corporations of that, you know, 527s, according to one source that I read as well. Back in the day, back in 1972, there was a National Black Political Convention in Gary, Indiana, where a bunch of black folks got together, and among things considered was whether there should be an independent black political party, what have you. But I don't want to get too far off topic, but I'm curious to know what thoughts you might have had about that 1972 political convention in Gary, Indiana. I recently came across a documentary showing highlights of it. It was fascinating to a degree.
It actually grew out of the so-called Black Power movement, where people realized in the African-American community that it had enough of just about everything to forge a different path and to not constantly be servants to the larger entities.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the best ways to do that is to galvanize political power, political and economic power. And a convention was held. It wasn't covered this way, but my interpretation was it was very scary to America.
Mm-hmm.
When people saw the actual manifestation of the degree to which African Americans were disillusioned, not just disillusioned with the overall power structure, but more so emboldened to galvanize their own power. Of course, many things happened to sabotage the potential of that movement. But the main thing is that it was there. It was not the first time. Marcus Garvey, you may recall, in the 1920s, had demonstrated that kind of power and the need to galvanize power, not only on the national level, but on a global level, which is why he systematically was destroyed and the movement was destroyed. But that doesn't mean that you give up. There is legitimate argument, I think, for people who still consider themselves disfranchised, for people who still believe that they have done all they could to go along, to get along. It's not happening. So it would not be a bad idea to galvanize the power that you do have. And that is, of course, the resistance that we are getting from the duopoly. They will not allow it or easily allow it. And so it's a fight. The question is it worth a fight by the people who want to see progress? Is it worth the fight? If it is, then do something.
Okay.
So I want to ask you,
yes,
do
ma'am.
You believe, based on your own experience, do you believe there is legitimate reason to challenge the duopoly? Some may say, well, it's happening now with the Green Party. It's got Working Families Party. You have these different parties. So in a sense, they'll say, well, you're arguing a non-case because we have these parties, these splinter parties, small parties. So what is your problem?
Well, we may not even have the two parties, because like I said, on a certain level, they're one and the same. They're one and the same. In the higher echelons, you know, maybe the everyday people, maybe, you know, their hearts are good and they really think there's a difference, but when the rubber hit the road, those policymakers, those calling the shots, no difference. And another thing I think that is, if it could be a thing where the whole structure has to be pulled up from the roots in this country, because it's contaminated. That's one quote to Condoleezza Rice that I kind of agree with. The United States had a birth defect called slavery. that system of slavery. And this electoral process has grown out of that dynamic with the Electoral College and all this other stuff. You know, it's almost rotten to the core the way this political structure operates. And I don't think, you know, until the system of racism, white supremacy is eliminated and replaced with a system of justice, until justice is the main thriving, motivating, organizing principle for politics and policy, I don't think too much is going to change. And I like Neely Fuller's definition of justice, meaning, one, guaranteeing that no one is mistreated, and two, guaranteeing that the person who needs help the most gets the most constructive help. That's where I'm at this moment.
All right, so you don't see this happening anytime soon, that the political gates opening up and every possible political organization that has legitimacy to be organized and to present themselves to the people will have a chance to do so?
No, ma'am, I don't think so. And I'm not sure that those that want to get in this game, if this is a game they should be trying to get into, I think the game needs to be changed. We need a whole new game if it's going to, quote-unquote, game.
Could you talk about one or two aspects that you think should be out there that people should be able to say, well, yeah, I agree with this?
Well, if I understand your question, I think people, we need to first of all agree that we are human beings and that each and every one of us has value, and that there is no so-called hierarchy in nature, and that God has given each and every one of us the breath, the last breath that we just took and the next breath that we may be fortunate enough to take. And that we don't own this planet. We didn't create it. We don't own it. Things like that. There's no reason for people to be sleeping on the streets and empty houses on the block. There's no reason for people to be hungry. There's no reason for people to just drop bombs and kill other people, innocent people, for no reason. You know, just my mind, forgive me, I'm a little, yesterday it looks like before Congress they snuck through a bill to give another $38 billion to Israel. Now, I imagine this is both Democrats and Republicans, whatever they are. The bill was, I think it was House Amendment S-2497, what have you. You know, the largest aid package in U.S. history. And also including the bill, it says a bill for a special envoy who will monitor criticism of Israel worldwide. What kind of BS is this? Things of that nature. From what I understand, a lot of those folks in Israel are Ashkenazi Jews, what have you. And I remember Stokely Carmichael saying back in the day, I remember seeing him say this on a video, that the Democratic Party is really just a Zionist party. I don't know what to say about the so-called Republican Party. Forgive me if I'm straying from your question.
No, but the idea is that there are some legitimate issues that require their own arena to be dealt with as thoroughly as people can deal with them, because it needs to galvanize political thought out there. For example, the issue you just raised, how is that being raised within the confines of the Democratic Party or the Republican Party? They both agree that the United States, on top of the $93 billion that it gives Israel every year, ought to have more money. So if you happen to be of a mindset that says this is wrong, then you are automatically you're running against the tide in both the Republican and Democratic parties. So it's issues like this where people want to find a new home, so that they can, because it's politics, it involves taxpayer money, and it is a very complicated and justifiable discussion that needs to be had, which will not be had within the Democratic and Republican parties. It just won't be had. So you brought this to our attention, and this is a good discussion to have. Where do we go? Where do people go who think like you, who think like me, who think like other people who call into the program and are concerned that there is no political entity to help them raise the point in the arenas that it ought to be raised in? Thanks so much, Leona, for your call. David, yes, from Brooklyn, you're on the air.
Good afternoon, Eutrice.
Hello.
How are you today?
I'm hanging in like everybody
all
else.
All right, very good. You know, I've been thinking about this discussion, and what comes to my mind is the ruling class is really celebrating because they have the perfect system, this two-party system to benefit themselves. It is something that's working perfectly in their interests. It's an illusion, of so-called democracy, which we certainly don't have, and a way to corral people to get them to the point where they think they're making some great choices to let them go and vote for someone who they selected and maintain a system of capitalism, world capitalism, imperialism that's all over the world as they extract more income and wealth for themselves all over the world. I understand a few people have nearly half the wealth that exists in the world and income, and that's working fine. So anybody who's thinking about justice, you cannot have justice and the vicious type of capitalism that you have here. That's impossible. And the other thing that's come to my mind, Republican and Democratic divisions of the same party, you know, these people cannot be reformed. It's just like the article in the New York Times about the tiger in India. You know, you're gonna reform the tiger and get him to stop eating human people, the man-eating tiger? No, you can't do that. So there's no hope in the Democrat and Republican Party. Now, the point is, the people are so let's say misinformed, misdirected, that they don't understand the system they're in. You know, it's just the same thing as, you know, my book, Playing the Game. The people are being played, and it's a massive game, and it's not just the black folks that are the victims of this game. It's all the people. I mean, the people with the, what they call the white phenotype, white people, and all the other type of phenotypes. Everybody is being played by a small ruling class that dominates everything, and we don't get it. A lot of us just are completely clueless of what's going on. So we're running down to the poll and pulling lever or pressing the button for these people who are put up by the ruling class. I mean, this system is so corrupt, you know, it's ridiculous that, you know, we think that we're going to get some kind of justice in the system we have. I mean, the people who made the Constitution, they weren't about justice. These were slaveholders and people who were involved in business and whatnot, and they didn't want a democracy. So how come, you know, we think that we're in a democracy when we're really in a plutocracy, a government by the rich and powerful who just do what's necessary to jive and fool the people and play them and get them thinking that they're controlling something. You're never going to get anywhere with the Democrat and Republican Party. That's completely out. The system is all designed to benefit the ruling class, period. That's what capitalism here is about.
But let's look now. I mean, you've made your case in that regard very well. However, what, therefore, could work just the same for the people who are being played?
Well, the people have to wake up. They have their eyes open, but they're asleep. And they have to understand how the system or invention of white supremacy racism and the things that the government is doing are nothing but a way to play them. The idea that you get people afraid, you make them scared, and then you can run out and take all the tax money and buy guns and planes and tanks and go around the world with maybe 1,000 bases and do whatever you want. You get people afraid, and you don't charge taxes to the rich, which is on steroids now with Trump's new tax bill, and you just do what you're going to do as a capitalist, which is to enrich yourself and impoverish everybody else, and it's working fine for them. So, you know, people have to get it, and the Republican and Democrat Party are all part of it. I mean, why do you think that these people are interested in you as a regular person? These parties are run by the rich and powerful, the oligarchs and the rest of the plutocrats at the top. They run everything. And when you think that I'm a member of the Democrat or Republican, I mean, that's pretty stupid. But, you know, I don't want to call these people stupid. People just uninformed and misdirected and blinded by white supremacy racism and all the things that the ruling class does to control the people. I mean, Edmund Bernays, the one who so-called invented propaganda, I mean, this stuff is on steroids now. I mean, it's fantastic. I mean, the way they're able to trick people into functioning, you know, in such a way as they support their worst enemy. You know,
so
and that's
how,
what we have
what
in the
is,
whole country.
Therefore, what is a useful political tool at the moment for people who are outside of that? They want to change. Do you see on the horizon anything promising?
Well, as I see it, the only promising thing is, you know, some rebellion. We start off with demonstrations and we stop voting for these people in this party. And we make those kind of demands that they have. They're not going to pay any attention if you just go down and vote. I mean, that means nothing to them. They have ways of getting around that. Then the people in power are in power because the ruling class wants them in power. So I don't see much going on in terms of significant things because most people are wedded to the Republican and Democratic Party. And you know, that's going to get you nowhere. And that's regardless of what phenotype you belong to, black or white or whatever. So, you know, that's the important thing. People have to understand who the enemy is, the enemy. That's what people don't get, the enemy, the real enemy. The enemy is not the immigrants or Mexicans or black folks or whatnot. They have to deal with the real enemy. And the enemy is the ruling class. Those are the people that are keeping you poor and making it very difficult to live the type of life that is positive, because they are in charge and they're only interested in one thing, and that one thing is profit, profit, profit. And they don't care who is damaged by that, And the only way they can keep doing that is to play the people. And they're playing them well. And the Democrats and Republicans, they got a formula of this new two-party system, ridiculous thing.
All right. Well, as you can hear the music, it's a hint to me that we're out of time. But we got so much from our contributors today to consider. Really profound thoughts. Thank you all for contributing and for listening. And we join each other tomorrow for Free Your Mind Friday. Thanks again. Bye-bye.